Return to Camp Blood, episode 25, When Jason Met Shelly. This episode is brought to you by Friday the 13th franchise.com.
Jesus Christ. Jason's alive. He killed my friend, now he's coming for me.
He's got a death curse.
Jason's a legend.
I'm Mrs. Warren, an old friend of the Christies.
Jason belongs in hell.
You're doing the biggest stay here.
Never come back again.
Today is his birthday.
Welcome to another episode of Return to Camp Blood. I'm your host, Chris, joined by my fellow counselors, E.
What's up, everybody?
Eric.
What's up, y'all?
And Oz.
What's up, campers?
Tonight we have with us the man who is responsible for giving Jason his mask in part three. Ladies and gentlemen, he's not an asshole. He's an actor. Shelly himself, please welcome to the show, Mr. Larry Zerner. How you doing, sir?
So great. Thanks for having me.
So, how did you come to be cast for part three? I mean, because...
I was a aspiring actor at the time, and I had this job handing out movie tickets to sneak previews of movies. And I was working one Saturday night. I was in Westwood handing out tickets to a screening of a movie no one had ever heard of from Australia called The Road Warrior. And no one wanted to see it. And and these two people came up to me and they said, are you an actor? And I'm like, I was struggling actor, and I'd done some, acted in high school, and I was like, yeah, I'm an actor. And they're like, well, we wrote this movie and we just think you'd be perfect for it. And I said, well, what's that? And they said, oh, it's Friday the 13th, part three. And I was like, yeah. So, that was Mark Kitchener and Carol Watson, and they were the writers. And, I gave them the name of my agent, and a couple days later, I got a call to come down and audition. And I still had to audition because, the writer didn't mean anything to the other people, but it seemed it was meant to be that they were picturing like fat and with the afro and nerdy. And
I think we can all relate to that.
You're describing Chris right now. I mean,
and you too. Yeah. Shut up.
Hey, I've got no afro.
Neither do I. My head's shaved. So, had you seen any of the other films prior to you working on it?
I don't remember. I don't think I had seen. I definitely hadn't seen two, and I just don't remember if I'd seen one at that point or not. I mean, I knew what it was. I just don't know if I don't remember if I saw it. I'm going to say no. Well, maybe. I just don't know. I don't know.
So you knew that it was Friday the 13th part three from the get go, because I had heard a lot that, going into production, there was a lot of secrecy, and a lot of people that were cast didn't find out until they showed up, that.
Yeah, I knew from that day that it was Friday the 13th. I'd heard that. I don't know if the other actors knew. I mean, certainly we knew when we started, production, that right. We knew it was Friday the 13th. They did the movie under a different name, Crystal Japan. That right. was purely to, because it, they were, people were working who were union, who were working non-union, and that's, that'll get you in trouble. So
right. That's
why they were shooting. Because if they knew it was Friday the 13th, the unions will come down and make trouble. So that's why it was shot under that title. But the script, I'm almost certain the script said Friday the 13th on it. I don't know. So, maybe there was a script that said Crystal Japan, but we knew what it was. I mean, I'm sure none of the girls had knew what the hell Friday the 13th was. I'm sure none of them had seen the movie, any of the movies, or even heard of it. But we knew, they knew it was a horror movie,
During your death scene, you come to the door, and, after your hijinks that you've played throughout the film, that Shelley has, and you come to the door, and was your death scene actually filmed and that was edited out, or was it meant to be that you go into the barn and don't know exactly what happened to you other than come into the door with the actor who plays Chili in the movie.
Right. Yeah. They never shot a scene of Jason with Shelley, Jason slicing his. They just, you know, it was like nice makeup job. So it was like maybe he's faking it again. Oh, it's another, you know. I think that was the idea, that it wasn't necessary to have that scene. So, yeah, we never shot that.
Yeah, speaking of those particular hijinks that Eric just mentioned, like with the axe and everything, I'm curious, was all of that written into the script, or did you get to like improvise some of it or anything, like some of the lines or however the pranks played out or any of that?
No, everything in the script was written. There was very little improv on the set. It was just not that kind of set where they were open to, hey, just do what you want. It was, but the one line that's improvised is when I call Vera a bitch. That was a joke. That was like, it was sort of the end of the scene, and it was, I don't know if you guys are old enough to remember Saturday Night Live and Dan Aykroyd would Emily Letella, or Gilda Radner was Emily Letella, and she'd have that thing with Jane Curtin, and then there would be a pause, and then she'd say bitch, and that was the joke. That was what I was going for. Really, it was more for the but it worked. I mean, when I said it, I remember the crew cracked up, but I remember like there was a pause, so I knew they could cut away before they did it, but they ended up using it.
Worked and, awesome.
Yeah, so that was the one improvised line in the script.
Awesome.
So you were actually pretty active. So can you really juggle?
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Originally the script called for all of us to have paddle balls. You know, those rubber balls on the end of the string. Geez. So I remember I spent like a week trying to, you know, doing the paddle ball, and I got pretty good. And then Steve was just like, you can make it go back to, you can hit the paddle, but you can't control the ball going into the camera, right? If you ever gone doing a paddle ball, the ball goes left, right, up, down, left, you know, it comes back to the center, but it's never going into the camera, which is what you need. So then they realized that's not going to work. And, they knew I could juggle. It was on my resume. And so they said, you know, can you juggle? And I said, yeah. And, Jeffrey could juggle a little, and I worked with him. And so that's what that became.
So speaking of, the other actors on the set, we actually had a listener that wanted to know about working with Dana Kimmel. Evidently there's been a lot of stuff, talking about the fact that she was a bit of a diva. I don't know how true that is, so I figured I'd ask you.
Not true at all. It's not true at all. I know people, that rumor came around, she was great. There was really no attitude from Dana, I mean, at all. She had a good time. So, not true.
Fair enough.
Did you get to do any stunts or anything? Did you get to drive the VW over the... over the motorcycles for the motorcycle gang and all that kind of stuff? Or did you?
No, so I drove the car a little bit, but I'd never drove a stick before. So I'm basically learning how to drive a stick for the movie.
I've been there. Jesus.
That Volkswagen was not the easiest stick to drive. So they were not going to let me anywhere near the motorcycles. I think I actually did hit the motorcycles once, just in that, I think I did so that scene where at the beginning when I back up, that's me. But the shot of hitting the motorcycle is a stuntman. And then he does the U-turn in the Volkswagen. So that's a stunt driver doing the 180. And then they put us on this contraption. They just put the car in a contraption and just spun it. So it like basically like a trailer hitch with a tire that would just roll. And that was what they did for the interior. So the car, they're just moving it around. We're not even driving at that point, just for the interior of that.
Now I heard that there was actually an extended scene to the whole, interaction there with the motorcycle gang that was I guess edited out of the film. Is that
not
is
edited that out? Never shot.
Oh, it was never shot
in the original script, and it's in the book. So there was a whole chase. So after, instead of Shelley and Varia just driving away and Ali yelling at him, they got on their bikes and chased after Shelley and Vera, and then Shelley like opens a champagne bottle, like it's a champagne bottle that they bought at the store, and he pops the cork into, you know, one of their faces, which makes them fly off the motorcycle, and then I think gets rid of Loco, and then he like slams on the brakes, and Ali and Fox go head over heels above, you know, over them. And I think they just realized that was just way too much. You know?
That would make Shelley a marksman with a champagne bottle, let me tell you.
Yeah. I mean, it would have been great. I mean, it would have really been like,
it would have been funny for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. It would have been, I mean, it would have been so exciting. It was like so exciting, yeah, but it didn't happen.
Now I got to ask you this. Everybody knows that Jason got his iconic hockey mask from Shelley, but do you know, because there's a lot of, you know, different people trying to take credit for this, but who is the person who came up with the idea? Hey, let's introduce the hockey mask. Is there one person that was,
because I wasn't involved in that discussion, because obviously they just came to me and said, there's, you know, here's your mask.
Right.
No one asked me. And they made a bunch of masks because they needed a mask that, like, there's like four or five masks that had to be made. And
were they all hockey masks? All the masks that they made, or were they just experimenting to see what would look better? Or what?
No. Like even when you do the mask, they needed different masks because the one that Jason wore was a little bigger, I think, than the one that I had. That's what I'm told.
Oh, okay.
Just when you're doing props, you make, you know, you have extras just in case something breaks or, you know.
Right. I thought maybe that if they hadn't decided that it was going to be a hockey mask, if they had several different types of masks because they weren't sure which way they were going to go is what I was.
I never saw, you know, they, I just remember, you know, I showed up that day and they're like, here's your mask. You know, kind of funny because I don't know. At the beginning of the movie, Shelley has that other mask he wears.
Right, right.
Mm-hmm. And it's like, who is this guy who brings two masks with him for a weekend in the mountains? It's like, what?
And a wetsuit and a harpoon gun.
I'm going to bring two just to make sure that I can pull this off the great prank twice, you know.
Now I've heard, Larry, that the mask that you wore was actually made out of leather. Is there any truth to that?
No, it's a hockey mask.
Okay, because I've heard on some boards they were saying that the mask you wore was leather. So that's totally wrong.
It's totally wrong.
Okay.
Totally wrong. It was a
hockey mask. There you go.
You heard it here.
I
don't know how old you guys are, but I used to play street hockey, so I had a hockey mask. So, you know, that's what we used to wear those. I mean, all the kids, you know, if you did any hockey, those were masks before they went to the cage. They realized that, you know, the cages have much better visibility. So it was a real hockey mask.
Fair enough. I just had to ask.
Another
that.
Rumor dispelled.
Yes, it is.
Because the shoot, you know, was in 3D, they were doing a very new 3D process. No one had ever done this process before. It took forever. So everything took forever. So we only had maybe, you know, two or three takes at the most. So there was never like, oh, just let's do one for the actors or, you know, go crazy. It was just like, get the lines, get going. Let's move on to the next scene. That's how it was.
Right.
Now, with the 3D stuff, I've read that the scene with you and Vera in the biker grocery, where you're throwing the wallet, that you guys actually had a hard time filming that because you had to throw it towards the camera. And
yeah, that was the only one where it was just like, do it again, do it again, do it again. But it was just turn around, throw the wallet, throw the wallet, throw the wallet. It was like 10 or 12 times because the wallet has to hit the camera, and it, you know, it's, That's not easy. It's a small dog. Wasn't that close to it.
And you reenacted that for Crystal Lake Memories because and you keep throwing it like I don't know half a dozen times at the camera.
So you're a lawyer now. How did you go from actor to lawyer?
Well, the acting thing wasn't really working, my dad was a lawyer, and so it was encouraged. And I thought, well, you know, I'll go to law school because it'll be something to do as opposed to not acting. So that's how it happened. But it's worked out well. I've been a lawyer now 24 years and I really like it. So
yeah, I see you got some pretty big name, clients like Sid Haig, George Lutz. How's it? I mean, I don't know how much you can say about your clients, but how's it like, you know, how's it working with those guys?
I love all my clients. My clients, you know, it's just me, my firm, and I'm a sole practitioner. So I'm very picky who I get to represent. And I really love my clients. And like George Lutz was just an amazing guy, really interesting guy. And it was really sad. We were in the middle of a lawsuit and he passed away. And it was very tragic.
Yeah, and for those who don't know, I'm talking to you, Oz. George Lutz was the center of the Amityville Horror. So, in case you didn't know who that guy was,
he was Ryan Reynolds in the movie.
Yeah, in the reboot.
Yep.
I know you only do a particular kind you only have a particular kind of practice. And if you can't answer this, I understand. But what is the weirdest thing anyone has ever tried to get you to hire you for?
Well, I get a certain amount of really sort of mentally disturbed people who call me. A woman called me and she wanted to sue Universal because if you've been to Universal, I don't think they have it anymore, but they had a ride, the Back to the Future ride.
Yes, and it was awesome.
Yeah, they don't have it anymore.
There was dinosaurs and stuff, and she said they stole that from her life.
Totally believable.
I'm like, that's your life? And she's like, yes, that's my life. They stole that.
Was this Wilma Flintstone?
Maybe.
Oh, that's awesome. That is awesome. So you do mainly like you look over screenplays and stuff like that. What other kind of services do you offer? You know, because somebody listening might actually be somebody that might hire you.
Yeah. Maybe. Might find one of those mentally disturbed listeners we may have. Who knows?
Well, I represent writers and actors and directors and producers in contracts with, you know, if they need, someone's going to buy a screenplay or they want to acquire a screenplay or they want to get hired to do something. And then I do litigation involving, you know, people who didn't get paid for a contract in the entertainment or their script got ripped off. So that's my practice.
Oh, man, so you stayed within the realms of Hollywood, I see.
Yeah, all my stuff is entertainment related, pretty much.
Yeah, and you're the only lawyer that I've ever seen that has a nice blog that interacts with people and you answer random questions. I mean, I was going through your page and that's just awesome. I mean, that's philanthropy at its best.
Well, I like answering questions. I like people to. It's so frustrating that people don't know some simple stuff, and I want people to be aware that they're better. You know, they shouldn't get ripped off just because they don't know.
Do you have any interesting or funny, you know, I guess anecdotes or anything from being on set? Anything? Any, you know, jokes that were played? I mean, that were off camera that we didn't see in the film. Or anything that may have gone wrong that was kind of funny or interesting?
I've got to think for. I mean, you know, the whole thing was interesting to me. I had a great time. I'm trying to think what I put into the, you know, what the stories that are all. I almost think all the stories are in, you know, the book. I hope everyone's you know, read Crystal Lake Memories.
Oh, of course.
Of course.
You know, so it was all good. I don't, you know, we didn't, you know, there was all sorts of things that happened. But not to me. I had a good time.
That wasn't real pot you guys were eating, was it?
No, like oregano.
I was going to say, was that oregano?
Yeah, it really tasted bad.
Well, all right, Larry, we really appreciate you taking the time to talk to us tonight.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you, sir, very much.
All right.
But yeah, we really appreciate it, and we loved you in the movie. And if I ever need someone to represent me when somebody's trying to take my ideas, I will keep you in mind, sir. All right. As always, please rate, review, and subscribe wherever you listen to the show at. If you want to support the show financially, head over to campbloodpodcast.com/donate. Send your questions and theories to our Facebook page or tweet at Camp Blood Pod. You can also send an email to feedback@campbloodpodcast.com. We also have a phone number that you can text or leave a voicemail, and that's at 757-637-0216. And also, please consider checking out some of the other shows on the Tangent Bound Network, like the network's flagship show, the Tangent Bound Podcast, The Night Keep, or The Hateful Dead. You can find these shows and many, many more at tangentboundnetwork.com. Our intro and outro music was graciously provided to us by the Downriver Rat. Check out his music at thedownriverrat.com. You're not going to call us nerds, are you? Because we talked to Eric Anderson and he called us nerds.
We're Friday the 13th nerds.
A nerd, it'd be the pot calling the kettle black. So.